so important to me, like, are important to me, and so were so important to me that time in my life when I was just starting out. I feel like I'm still just starting out. But you all were so encouraging to me, and hospitable and kind and friendly and loving, and became my family very quickly. I was only here for 6 or 7 months, but there is such a pivotal and important time in my life, and I can't thank all of you enough. And just, I love seeing you and getting to speak to you, and it's just always encouraging for me to be here. I love you guys a lot. This is a lesson. I mean, Roger was talking about the theme you guys had about prioritizing God. One of the things he talked about, one of the subtopics, was prioritizing growth. And I had just recently given a sermon about Abraham, kind of zooming out, trying to look at the big picture of Abraham. One of the things for me growing up, some people say in the pews, or growing up hearing this story, the way it was taught to me was often very microscopic. And what I mean by that is we got really into the details of Abraham's life, and it's great. I could tell you a lot of things about his life and the details. But as that happened, I never appreciated, I think, the arc of his entire life. And so tonight we're going to try and do just that, which is a bold undertaking for a man like Abraham who has so much written about him. I guess that's where I put this on, huh? Because there's a lot about Abraham. He's called the father of the faith. He's an example of someone who was incredibly faithful, and there's all these ups and downs. But what I want to do is I want to look at how his life started, and then I'll look at three phases of his life. We're going to kind of gloss over a lot. But hopefully after this lesson together, the encouragement from me is that you would read the whole life of Abraham and see if this pans out, and see what, after looking at this, these ideas of his life, read his entire life, read all the chapters about Abraham, and see the lessons to be gleaned from him. So we're going to look at three phases of his life: a phase of going, a phase of waiting, and a phase of giving, and see what we can either relate to that or see what we can learn from him about our own faith and how we ought to prioritize our own growth. Let's start here in Genesis chapter 11 and verse 27. Genesis chapter 11, verse 27. Now, these are the records of the generations of Terah. Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran became the father of Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah, in the land of his birth, in Ur of the Chaldeans. Abram and Nahor took wives for themselves. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. Sarai was barren. She had no child. Terah took Abram his son and Lot the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went out together from Ur of the Chaldeans in order to enter the land of Canaan. And they went as far as Haran and settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now, I think this is one of the things that I missed a lot with the life of Abraham. I would start in chapter 12, Genesis chapter 12, and I wouldn't read these five or six, this small section before Genesis 12, but it's really interesting how Abram's life starts. We get some important details that become more and more important. We learn about his father, Terah. And it seems, what's interesting about Terah is he has his own sons, and one of them dies, right? Haran dies in the presence of his father, it says. But did you notice the action of this, of all these? There's a lot of, like, people. We learn about a lot of things about these people. But what action was Terah taking in the end of this section, verses 31 and 32? What did it say Terah was trying to do, or tried to do? Terah took Abram his son and Lot the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai his daughter-in-law. And they went out together from Ur of the Chaldeans in order to enter where? Where were they going? Canaan. Isn't that interesting? It's really interesting because where did they end up? They ended up in Haran. Now, if you look at a map, which I didn't bring, there is in the ancient Near East, Ur is like all the way over here to the east, and you had to go up, follow the river, and then follow what they call the Fertile Crescent down the land of Canaan. Haran was basically exactly halfway between Ur of the Chaldees and the land of Canaan. And it's really interesting that we get this detail about Terah. This is all we really know about Terah, is that he set out for Canaan. But where did he make it to? He made it halfway. And he stopped. That's all we know. And I can't
I can't say that enough. That's all we know.
But it does make me want to speculate a little bit. So that's where this next statement is going to be, is in the land of speculation. I wonder if Terah got a similar promise to Abram. Because the next thing we read in Genesis 12 is this magnificent promise given to Abram. And it says, look, if you go to Canaan, if you go and take this land for yourself, all these wonderful things are going to be true about you. And Abraham, we know, is defined by this fact that he got these promises and he went and he did go to Canaan. But it comes right after the fact that Terah, for some reason, was also trying to go to Canaan, but just didn't make it. And maybe he didn't make it because the grief of his losing his son. Maybe there's all these things we could read into this, and I don't know about all that. But I do wonder, part of me just wonders, if Terah had made it to Canaan, if the story of Genesis would be a little different. Of course, we can't answer that question. But I do want to raise that because I think, at the very least, there's a truth to, we can't underestimate the importance of Abram going to Canaan and making it. I think sometimes I've gotten so comfortable with this story that I'm like, ah, he just traveled, he got there, you know, whatever, it's not a big deal. But I think seeing that Terah didn't make it just enforces the idea that it was really, really important that Abram did make it. And that's just how we need to, as we start reading about Abram's life, just to start off with, I think it's important to see that in the first phase of Abram's life where he did go, where he went when God told him to go, it's no small thing that he picked up his life, picked up his family, and went. So let's continue on in the story and see Abram's, well, actually it gets to looking at Abraham. I'm going to call him Abraham probably the whole night, even if it says Abram in the text. So I just want to put that out there because I get mixed up with Abram. Let's call him Abram. All right, Genesis 12, starting in verse 1. Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. Stop there.
Again, this passage to me, like, I could almost quote it, because I've heard it so many times, read it so many times, but it is so magnificent. These things that God is promising Abraham are so wonderful and so big. These promises are promises to Abraham that if he would follow God and go where God sent him and be who God wanted him to be, that God would make him into something he could never be by himself. You see that? Look at these promises again in that light. Think about this. He says, all right, leave your country, leave your relatives, leave your father's house. And we can summarize that as leave everything you're comfortable with. Leave your comfort zone. Leave what's safe. Leave... You know, it's like telling an 18-year-old kid, get out of your house. Get out of your parents' house and go make something of yourself. But God says, leave everything that's comfortable and go to a land that I will show you, which implies you don't know this land. You don't know anything about it. But I'll show you everything about it. But to the point I was saying that these promises are magnificent because God promises to make Abraham into a great nation. He's going to bless him. His name is going to be remembered and great. He's going to be a blessing, and anyone who blesses him will, because of that blessing, get blessed themselves. Anyone who curses him will find themselves to be cursed. And the biggest promise is the last one, which looks forward to Jesus Christ himself. And he says, in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. I mean, if there's anything you could hope for your life, or if you look maybe if you have children or your children's lives, if there's anything you could hope, wouldn't it be these things? That their legacy would be one that everyone who was touched by that, by your life or your children's life, that they would be better for it. And that anyone who remembered your name would remember it in such a way that said, man, your name was great. The things that Ben did or the things that he's remembered for, they're wonderful. And everyone, everything that we remember about him is only good, only a good impact on the world. And the thing is, if you think about how small our lives seem sometimes in the scope of the grand world that we live in, we can't ensure that for ourselves, can we? I mean, sometimes we can barely ensure that we get a meal in a day, let alone trying to make sure that we leave an impact that is positive, that is lasting, that is affecting not only us and our family, but hopefully a good number of people. And that's everything that God promises to Abraham. And I think if we think about this promise as all our aspirations for our lives, what more is there to aspire to? God promises Abraham that he would be helpful, in the most mundane way to put it, but he would be helpful to everybody, and helpful to people he wouldn't even meet, hasn't even met. Continue on reading in verse 4. So Abraham gets these promises, and they're contingent on him going. So look at verse 4, let's see what Abraham does. His father didn't make it, but what does Abraham do?
Chapter 12, verse 4. So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with them. Now Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his nephew, and all their possessions which they had accumulated, and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan. Abram passed through the land as far as the site of Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. Now the Canaanite was then in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your descendants I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. Then he proceeded from there to the mountain on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. Abram journeyed on, continuing toward the Negev. Now there was a famine in the land, so Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. Stop there.
So, if we're following the story from the beginning, we see Terah given this call to go to Canaan. He doesn't make it. And Abram is given these wonderful promises and says, "Look, if you go, I'll make you everything you could ever possibly want to be."
And what does he do? How do we read it? In verse 4, what's it say? He went. I think it's one of the great, maybe, understatements of almost the buildup of all this. It's just like, and he went. And then you read, I think, what makes it even more impactful is, how old was Abram when he left? 75. This guy was living with his parents until he was 75 years old. Now, obviously, it's a little different, you know, than our times. But he seems to be a little bit of a late bloomer. And you think about this.
It's interesting, as I've gotten older, I left my parents' house when I was 19. I went to Florida, and then I went to Minnesota, then I came here to California. Now I'm in Kentucky. And it's been interesting for me to see, not only has it changed me in so many positive ways, but I've been able to meet so many more people. And I feel like I know where my family is. I know what they're about. And I know what good they're still doing where they're at. But it was scary to leave, and it was scary to move to the exact opposite corner of the country. What I've seen is this caused me to grow myself more than I ever would have if I had stayed at home. And you wonder about Abram, who God certainly took a special care for, a special liking to. God's like, "Hey, I will do wonderful things with you, and all you have to do is just be your own man and go." And it seems like maybe that was a bigger deal to Abram than we may give him credit for. He didn't leave till he was 75. It seems like maybe it was not his first desire. But he goes. He takes his wife, he takes his nephew, he takes all his possessions, and they go. And look, if you look in the story, like in around verse 6, he goes to Canaan and he kind of does a survey of the whole land. He goes through all of it. And at one point, God appears to him in verse 7, and it reaffirms, right? Reaffirms that to your descendants I will give this land. What's going to be important about this story going forward, and you probably already know this, maybe, is that what we already know about Sarai is that what? Well, she's barren. But God keeps talking about your descendants are going to get this land. And Abraham's already 75 years old. This already seems a little ridiculous, a little hard to believe. But Abram goes, and he's there, and he believes the Lord and worships God and then worships God again, and he seems confident about this. But one thing I want us to look at, God tells him to go. God says, "Look, I'm going to take you to a land that I'm going to show you." But what's the land like when Abram gets there? You see that in verse 10? What's the land like? We think of Canaan as a land flowing with milk and honey, right? Maybe think of the story of the 12 spies, and what they saw when they spied out the land was this bountiful fruit, these huge clusters of grapes and just more bounty of food than you could ever possibly eat. But what does Abraham find when he gets to Canaan? He finds a famine. And it's a famine, so it's severe. There's nothing to eat, nothing there. Now imagine being Abraham, and God calls you and says, "Hey, I'm going to take you somewhere and I'm going to make you great there. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be everything you need and want." You're like, "All right, God, I'm all in." You leave Ur, which, by the way, Ur and Haran were great places. Fertile land, civilized, all his family, all the people he loved, a great place to be. Abraham leaves that on a gamble, on a gambit, on a risk, with having faith in God. And he gets to Canaan, and what does he find? Famine. I just think, imagine being Abraham and getting this call, and God's like, "Hey, I'm going to take you somewhere, I'm going to show you." It's like a surprise, okay? And you get there, and it's like, "God, this place isn't that great." And it's interesting, I think this is an interesting thing that God does in Abram's life, where And not only does he challenge him to leave, but when he gets there, he challenges him even more. I wonder all the aspirations and the hopes that Abram had about this land. He gets there, and maybe he's just disappointed. Like, I don't know. This isn't exactly what I had in mind. Just to look to some of this phase of Abram's life about going, I want to talk a little more about maybe that disappointment or that famine. But look here in Hebrews 11, 8 and 10. It reads, "By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed, by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore there was born, even of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore." Now what I want to focus on is the first part of this verse, where it's everything we've just been talking about. Abraham, when he was called, obeyed because he went. That's all he was called to do initially, just go. And he went out, like we've been talking about, not knowing where he was going. And then, by faith even further, he lived as an alien in the land of promise. Now, do you remember Abraham gets to the land of promise and it's the severe famine? What does Abraham do after that? We're not going to read it. We don't have time to read it. He goes down to Egypt, right? What happens there? Sarah apparently was just drop-dead gorgeous. She's one of the most beautiful women in the Bible, apparently, maybe ever to live. And Abraham has this beautiful wife, and he gets to Egypt, and he's worried that people are going to kill him for his wife. And what does he tell Sarah to do? Do you remember? He says, Tell them you're my sister. And all this nonsense goes on that just doesn't turn out well. And the Bible never speaks here or there about how we're supposed to look at this, but it does seem like a mistake, right? It seems like a mistake that maybe Abraham didn't trust that God would take care of him, that God would really keep him safe. It seems like a lapse of faith or judgment, a mistake on Abraham's part, in my opinion, as I read this. Maybe not a sin, but close to it. What's really interesting, though, is that all that God encourages or emphasizes about this story is the fact that Abraham went. Now, when you think about Abraham going to Canaan and going to Egypt, what is the first thing you think of? For me, it's often the fact that he made a mistake. Like, that's when I think about Abraham's life, I often think, man, he blew it, though. Like, he's a good man, he's faithful, but the going isn't nearly as impressive to me as the fact that he made this mistake when he got to Egypt. But all God talks about in the Bible is the fact that Abraham went. And I just want to talk about this and maybe make an application here about this phase of Abraham's life where he was just told to go, to get out, to move from his comfort zone and go somewhere where he didn't know. And then he got there, and it maybe probably wasn't as great as he thought it would be. I just think there's such a great application for us for what God does with his people so often is he says, look, I know things are great with your family. I know things are great where you're comfortable, where you've been living your whole life, where you know your surroundings, you know your capabilities, you know how to do what you're doing. But I think if all of us are honest and introspective with ourselves, we could look into ourselves and say, man, I know there's more I could be doing. Maybe I could make close relationships with some of the people here in my church. Maybe I could be a little bolder about talking to some of my coworkers or close friends about the fact that I have this faith in Jesus Christ. But instead of us doing that, we stay in our comfort zones, we stay in our bubbles, we stay in our own lanes and say, man, that would take me to being someone that I'm not sure I can be. And see, that's the exact same conundrum that Abram was faced with. That he was told to go, all these promises were contingent on him leaving everything that he knew, everything that was comfortable, everything that was secure, where his family was, all his possessions were. Doing something that even his father apparently couldn't do. And I think there probably would have been a million excuses for Abraham not to go. I just see a lot of similarities with that in my life and the times where I've been stuck with this dilemma of choices where there's one way or another. Many times it's probably more than that. But the call to complacency or laziness or the call to just stay comfortable is always there in my mind. Like, I could do more, but sleeping in today sounds really nice. Not working out like I know I need to. Not going and talking to that person. Not reaching out to this person I know probably is struggling. It's going to be an awkward conversation. That might not go well. And what's interesting about Abraham is he did go, and it didn't go well. He got there, and it was a famine. I think there's an interesting even application in that, that if we go where God calls us to go, sometimes it's not going to turn out like we expect it to. And all I'm saying about this phase of Abraham's life is that I think a great application from Abraham, his first phase of his life where he went, is that we need to be pushing ourselves to go wherever God calls. And maybe he doesn't come and talk to us and say, hey, go move to Kentucky, you know. But maybe if we look into his word and we see the call to be more loving and the call to be more hospitable and the call to be everything that Jesus was and everything the fruit of the Spirit encouraged, and we know we're not there yet, we need to be pushing ourselves to go like Abraham went. So that's the lesson I think we get from this first phase of Abraham's life where he went. But let's look at the next phase of his life. Look at Genesis chapter 15, and we'll see about this phase of Abraham waiting. So Abraham left when he was 75. Keep that in mind. He's already really old. But look here in Genesis 15. Let's pick up in verse 1. Genesis 15 and verse 1. It says, after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, do not fear, Abram. I am a shield to you. Your reward shall be very great. Abram said, O Lord God, what will you give me, since I am childless? And the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. And Abram said, since you have given no offspring to me, one born in my house is my heir. Then behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, this man will not be your heir, but one who will come forth from your own body, he shall be your heir. And he took him outside and said, now look toward the heavens and count the stars, if you are able to count them. And he said to him, so shall your descendants be. Then he believed in the Lord, and he reckoned it to him as righteousness. Stop there. So, the problem we've been talking about that you see in the initial chapters is that Abraham's already an old man. He's promised this land, promised to become a great nation, promised to have all these descendants, but he has not even one child. Abraham's not stupid. And as he's in the land and he's sojourning there, he prays to God. He says, look, I don't understand how this can work. And he's talking about all the solutions. Abraham's tried to concoct all these solutions. Like, well, maybe this person born in my house, he's going to be my heir. That didn't really seem like what the promise was, but that seems to be how it's going. He's trying to make sense of everything. And God says, what's God's response to that in this story? How does God reaffirm it? What's interesting is God, I don't know, is this, God's responses are always interesting. What God does is he says, look, go count the stars. That's how many descendants you're going to have. I just think that's a really, it's like when God tells Abraham that I am. It's just an answer where it's like, listen, we can talk all day and try to reaffirm this, but you just need to be reminded that I will answer the promises I make. And so Abraham believes him. And this is why we love Abraham. This is why the Bible loves Abraham, is because God makes these promises, God interacts, God reminds him and encourages him, and Abraham takes it to heart and he pushes on forward. But even here, right, we see Abraham make a mistake. In Genesis 16, read with me, if you will, Genesis 16 in verse 1 as well. Because here this gets a little more complicated as Abraham and Sarai try to maneuver a way into getting the promises to happen. If you look here in Genesis 16 in verse 1. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. And she had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, now behold, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I will obtain children through her. And Abram listened to the voice of Sarai. Generally good marriage advice. And Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan. Abram's wife Sarai took Hagar the Egyptian, her maid, and gave her to her husband, Abram, as his wife. He went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her sight. And Sarai said to Abram, may the wrong done to me be upon you. I gave my maid into your arms, but when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her sight. May the Lord judge between you and me. But Abram said to Sarai, behold, your maid is in your own power. Do to her what is good in your sight. So Sarai treated her harshly, and she fled from her presence. Stop there. So Abraham and Sarai both are still struggling with this promise, right? They're getting older. They know that Sarai's barren. They know that that's not working. And so they start to try and figure out, well, how can we make this happen? How can we get these promises we've been looking forward to. We know what they had the faith that it was going to happen, but they just weren't sure how it was going to happen. And mind you, this had been, they'd waited their whole lives for a son, and since God had made them promises, they'd waited even longer. They'd just been waiting for so long. And so Sarah comes up with this idea that seemed common in this time. Jacob did the same thing with his wives and their handmaidens. It seemed like a common thing to get more children, to get more offspring, that this would often happen, that women would give their handmaidens as another wife to their husband. So maybe it's not necessarily wrong in that sense, but there does seem to be another lapse of faith or some difficulty with them waiting for God's promises, because the results are terrible. Sarah becomes despised by Hagar, and then look what Sarah ends up doing in verse 6. What does Sarah end up doing to Hagar? She treats her harshly, my version says. Your version might even say violently. It seems like she abused her until she left, and that's exactly what Sarah wanted. And so all these things, as they're waiting for these promises, as they're trying to see the path forward, it's not clear. And they make mistakes, and they make errors, but Abram does get a son from Hagar. So look at Genesis 17, pick up in verse 15. Genesis 17 and verse 15. Then God starts talking to Abraham about descendants and all the promises again, trying to figure it out, and God initiates circumcision. But look here in verse 15 where it says, God said to Abraham, as for Sarah your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. I will bless her, and indeed I will give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her. Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed, and said in his heart, will a child be born to a man 100 years old? And will Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? Excuse me. Will Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? And Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. But God said, no, but Sarah, your wife, will bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. As for Ishmael, I have heard you. Behold, I will bless him and make him fruitful, and he will multiply him exceedingly. He shall become the father of 12 princes, and I will make him a great nation. But my covenant I will establish with Isaac, whom Sarah will bear with you at this season next year.
You see, Abraham's 100 years old at this point. He's waited 25 years since the promises were made. He's waited 25 years to receive this son. And he's tried various things. He's waited, and he tried to get a son through Hagar, and he did. You can see even here, look at verse 18. This is, I think, really interesting. Look at verse 18. Abraham says, man, I wish Ishmael would live before you. I wish that you'd look at Ishmael and that he would be acceptable to you. And God says no. And Abraham laughs that he's going to have a son. And it seems like Abraham is struggling to believe in or struggling to be a part of God's plan for him. And if you look in chapter 18, starting in verse 9 through 15, Sarah laughs at the same news. Both Abraham and Sarah both laugh at God telling they're going to have a son. It seems ridiculous to them. It seems like they can't believe that God's going to actually give this to them. Look here in Romans 4. What's interesting about this section, Romans 4 gives us some commentary on this section of their lives. For this reason, it is by faith, and this is in a larger context, but we're just going to look at what it says about Abraham and what it says about his faith. For this reason, it is by faith, in order that it may be in accordance with grace, so that the promise will be guaranteed to all the descendants, not only to those who are of the law, but also to those who are of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. As it is written, a father of many nations have I made you. In the presence of him whom he believed, even God, who gives life to the dead and calls into being that which does not exist. In hope against hope, he believed, so that he might become a father of many nations according to that which had been spoken, so shall your descendants be. And pay attention to this line. Without becoming weak in faith, he contemplated his own body, now as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, and the deadness of Sarah's womb. Yet, with respect to the promise of God, he did, I'm supposed to say not now, he did not waver in unbelief, but grew strong in faith, giving glory to God and being fully assured that what God had promised, he was able also to perform. Therefore, it was credited to him as righteousness. Let me ask you this. Reading that story, reading all the details about Abraham and Sarai and Hagar
and then God, and then Abraham saying, I wish Ishmael would live before you, and not really, and kind of seeming to struggle to follow God's plan. Would you comment on Abraham's life the way Paul did in Romans? The way the Holy Spirit through Paul did in Romans? Would you say he didn't become weak in his faith? Would you say that Abraham did not waver in unbelief? You know, for a lot of my life, I wouldn't have said that. I would have said, man, Abraham wavered. Abraham kind of got weak in his faith. He didn't have the faith to see the plan ahead of him. But what's so fascinating about Abraham's life to me is that God never comments on Abraham like that. God never castigates Abraham and says, man, you really goofed up this time, buddy. I can't believe you made these mistakes. But when God looks back on Abraham's life, and when he writes about it in the New Testament, he says, man, Abraham had this faith that was never, he didn't become weak in the faith. He didn't waver in unbelief. And yet, so often I think we look at that story like he did. And this is what I want to say about waiting periods in our life. Because this is a huge struggle for Abraham. Going was hard, but I think the waiting probably was even harder for him. But he waited. And through it all, he never lost faith in God. And through it all, he never gave up on being close to God and serving God and really waiting for God. Waiting for God in the sense that he was willing to listen to God's answers. He didn't try and make Ishmael his heir, even though God said no. He did wait. And this is what I think is really important for us, because there are many waiting periods in our life. Maybe your waiting period is the same as Abraham and Sarah, that you are waiting for a child. But maybe there's other things. Maybe there's health problems that you've prayed about and prayed about and prayed about, and they're not changing. Maybe it's a relationship in your life where someone, maybe a spouse or maybe a friend or maybe someone in your family, a parent, isn't treating you maybe the way they should. And you've prayed about it and prayed about it and prayed about it, and it hasn't changed, and you're waiting and waiting and waiting. And maybe in your prayers and in your life, as you prayed for days or weeks or months or maybe even years, you haven't seen a change. You start to wonder, man, does God even really care about this? Does he even care about me? Is he even going to do anything or ever going to do anything about this for me? I think it's easy for us to start to feel like our faith is wavering. But as we look at Abraham, what defined him wasn't that he did have his kind of foibles maybe, but God looks at him and says he was faithful and did not waver in unbelief because he kept on trusting in God. And so for us, I think the encouragement is if you're in a waiting period of your life or you're getting ready for that, or maybe there's one coming up, to never lose hope even if the answer comes later than we expect it to. I think
Abraham would have never thought that God was going to make him wait 25 more years for that promise. Maybe the answer to your prayer is further in the future than you'd like. I think the encouragement from Abraham's life is don't give up because it's not coming at the time you thought it would.
Let's go on to one last phase. Let's do this a little quickly. Genesis chapter 22. Now he's gone, he's waited, and now God asks him to do something even harder than both those things. In Genesis 22 and verse 1, it says, "Now it came about after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, 'Abraham.' And he said, 'Here I am.' He said, 'Take now your son, your only son whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering, on one of the mountains of which I will tell you.' So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and he split wood for the burnt offering, and arose and went to the place which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. Abraham said to his young men, 'Stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go over there, and we will worship and return to you.' Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering, and he laid on Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So the two of them walked on together. Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, 'My father.' And he said, 'Here I am, my son.' And he said, 'Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?' Abraham said, 'God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son.' So the two of them walked on together. Then they came to the place of which God had told him. And Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son, but the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, 'Abraham, Abraham.' And he said, 'Here I am.' He said, "Do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do nothing to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." And Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for burnt offering in the place of his son. Abraham called the name of that place, "The Lord will provide," as it is said to this day, "In the mount of the Lord it will be provided."
After you read all Abraham's life, and he's called to go and he's going to become a great nation, and he has to have a son to become a great nation, so all of his hopes are revolving around having just one son. And he waits 25 years for that, and then God says,
"All right, sacrifice your son." There's something more than, in this sacrifice, it's not just testing Abraham's love for his child, which certainly was a part of this. But in this, there's also a test that God is testing his, again, his faith in that God will provide for him even when God, Abraham can't understand it or see it. What's impressive about this story, though, is that Abraham goes. It says he goes the next morning in verse 3. In verse 4, he takes this 3-day journey, and you wonder what the conversation between Abraham and Isaac was like in those 3 days. And then he gets there, and Isaac even asks, like, "Where is the sacrifice?" And all these things must have been so hard for him. But he goes through with it to the point where God stops him from killing his son.
I want to see in the commentary that Hebrews 11 gives on this part of Abraham's life. It says, "By faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, 'In Isaac your descendants shall be called.' He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type."
Now here's I think, what is most impressive, what we need to think about this idea of Abraham giving up Isaac, and it's clear in this text in Hebrews, is that it wasn't just his son he was offering up, but it was all of his hopes. All the hopes Abraham had for his promises, all the hopes Abraham had for his entire life, they were all manifested in this kid. Everything he ever hoped for was in Isaac. And that wasn't just his son, which was enough to be difficult, but it was all of his hopes and dreams and aspirations for his life laid upon Isaac's shoulders. And God asked him to give it. And when we see foibles and maybe shaking in faith in the first couple of phases of his life, what do we see here? This, when Abraham's asked the biggest, most difficult task in his life, what do we see him do? There's no hesitation. There's no qualms. And we see here in Hebrews 11 that Abraham considered that God is able to raise people from the dead. Do we see Abraham witnessing that in his life? Had Abraham seen someone raised from the dead? Had Abraham witnessed someone die and come back to life? As far as we know, no. But Abraham at this point had realized that God could do things that were beyond Abraham's scope. And maybe, just maybe, God would bring him back if he killed him. And so in these three phases of Abraham's life, as he was going and waiting and now asked to give, we've seen this last time that he was asked to give his very life, and at this point he had no hesitation. He was ready to trust in God completely. And this is what I want us to see, just as we wrap up, as we think about Abraham, as we try to think about the idea of growth in our lives. I want to see that God prioritized growth in Abraham's life, first of all, by being patient with him. If we want to grow like Abraham and have a faith like Abraham, I think we need to zoom out and see the bigger picture a little bit like we did with Abraham tonight and realize that Abraham was much bigger than his mistakes. It's interesting, our culture right now has this habit of looking at even great people and saying, "Well, yeah, but 10 years ago this person tweeted this thing. Look how terrible a person he is because he tweeted that 10 years ago. Or yeah, that person has done these maybe great things, but have you realized all the mistakes they've made?" And these people who are influential and who do great things and who are respectable people will find one flaw in them. Will say, "Well, yeah, I know he's done all these great things or she's done all these amazing things, but they've made this mistake and therefore I can't respect anything about them." Imagine if we did that with Abraham. He'd be nothing to us. Imagine if God did that with Abraham. Imagine if God did that with you. Where God only looked at the mistakes you made and the flaws you had and said, "Yeah, I know Ben has done some good things, but man, he's made a ton of mistakes along the way." And that would be true. Very true. But God doesn't nitpick.
And especially in Abraham's life, he's patient with him. And if we want to prioritize growth, like God prioritizes growth, and apparently at least in Abraham's life, and I would say in our lives as well, we need to give ourselves a little more slack sometimes than we do. We need to give other people, other Christians especially around us, a little more slack and be a little more patient. Growth is never going to happen if we expect greatness 100% of the time. It's not how it works. When Jason was teaching me how to play tennis, one day I would do well, the next week I would do way worse than I'd done the week before that. And then I'd come back the next week and I'd be better. And growth is this weird way of going high highs and low lows, but the trajectory is upwards. We have to be patient if we want to prioritize growth. Secondly, God prioritized growth in Abraham's life by giving him progressively bigger tasks. Did you notice that? Going seemed hard for Abraham. But going was not nearly as hard as probably waiting 25 years for a son. You see, that was really hard for Abraham. And if those two things weren't hard enough, then the third and most, the biggest task God gave him was to give his son as a sacrifice. But by the time Abraham was asked the biggest thing, what do we see in his faith? He was ready for it. I think sometimes we put the cart before the horse in our own faith, in our own lives, and we think, well, man, I just want to be up there, up in the best, and being the perfect person. But we don't take the small steps to get there. We can't see the small steps, and we don't have the patience in ourselves, and we're not willing to look at the small tasks and say they're valuable too. We just want to do all the big things, the important things, the showy things, the giving of our sons. We're not willing to go and wait and go through the process to get there. I think another way we've got to prioritize growth like God is that we've got to be willing to do the smaller things to work up to the bigger things. And thirdly, God just was sure of his usage for Abraham. This is what's interesting too about Abraham is that most of Abraham's promises wasn't just a son, but it was all these amazing things that would impact the entire world. Did Abraham ever see that? Did Abraham ever see the full impact of his influence? No. And sometimes, in God using us for his purposes, we're not even going to understand, we're not even going to see it, we're not even going to see the fruit of our influence or of God using us. It might happen after we leave. It might be in our children or our grandchildren. It might be in the people our children and grandchildren impact themselves. Or it might just be in ways that we couldn't even see in the time. But God prioritized growth in Abraham by using him in ways that Abraham didn't even ever get to see in his earthly life. You see, this is why Abraham's faith is always highlighted, because Abraham was able to see things he couldn't actually see. And here it is for us as we try to prioritize growth in our own lives, especially growth in a spiritual sense and growth in our relationship with God and his people. We got to grow in our patience. We got to be willing to do the small things and work up to the big things. We also have to be assured, even if we can't see it right now, we have to be assured that if we follow God and if we exemplify the traits his son exemplified, the fruit of the Spirit, that he's going to use us for his purposes in ways that we may not see in real time. But I'm sure some of you, especially some of you older Christians, can look back and see that having happened in your life, right? See the impact you had just by being a friend to somebody. And see the impact you had just by loving and just by being kind, just by being patient. You can go through all the fruit of the Spirit just by being joyful. The impact it might have had on the people around you, that they knew God through you. And maybe you didn't see it at the time, but we have to, by faith, be assured that God will use us for his purposes if we stay close to him. So that's what we do with Abraham. So if we want to see growth in our life, we have to exemplify the things God exemplified as he looked at Abraham. Patience. Going through the growth from smaller to bigger and being assured of God using us even when we can't see it. All right. So we're going to stand and we're going to sing a song, and we would always invite you. As we look at Abraham and as you think about maybe your part to play, maybe you don't know God at all. And our encouragement would be to you, ask us about that. Talk to us. If you haven't been baptized or if you don't know what it takes even to be a child of God, please talk to us about that. But if you are already a child of God, and maybe you are like Abraham and you've just been stagnant a little bit, we always come together, and I think it's a good thing we come together even in the middle of the week, because we come together every time hoping that we can help each other. I know the elders here, I'm sure David too, as I know him, and everybody, every member here. If anybody here is struggling with anything or needs encouragement or needs prayers,
don't hesitate to ask. If we can help you with any spiritual need, please let us know as we stand and sing this final song.
Troublesome times are here, come and part with fear. Bring away all fear, that I say. Of a new heart to God, take the taste he brought. Keep the way pilgrims trod, Christians away. Jesus is coming soon, morning or night or noon. Many will meet him. Trumpets will sound. All of the birds shall rise. Wretch me in on the skies, going where no one dies. Heavenward bound. Troubles will soon be o'er. Happy forevermore. When we meet on that shore, we will walk in. Rising up in the sky, telling this world's goodbye. Oh, and we land in the blind glory to share. Jesus is coming soon, morning or night or noon. Many will meet and you, corrupt will sound. All the dark shall rise, righteous meet in the sky. Going where no one lies, and we're bound. Please be seated.
Let's go ahead and bow as we go before our God in prayer. Our dear and most heavenly Father, we are so thankful for a time to